My topic tonight is reviewing your life. And in general, nothing teachers say about things that you could do are things that you should do, or that you're not somehow good at your practice or good Buddhist or whatever if you don't do them. Everything is optional. And I want to say that particularly about tonight's topic, because there's no requirement that you should ever review your life. But I want to talk about it because it's something that I do on a fairly regular basis. I tend to do it around New Year's. And I personally know hundreds of people who have done this and found it extremely beneficial for their happiness. And that's what all of this is about. It's about your happiness. The first point is to remember. There are several basic teachings in Buddhism that support Stephen Levine, who is the author of a book called A Year to Live. When he points out that our reactions to the past strongly influence our experience of the present. What we've been through affects us, and the way it affects us affects our reactions to the next things that happen. Another important thing to remember in reviewing your life in any way is that you're dealing with memories and not actual events. The event necessarily is over, and our minds pretty much keep editing memory. So if you were to meticulously say what your memory was of some important event, say every year, you would notice as the years go by that that memory is constantly changing because of the events that have happened in the meantime and the influence that they've had on you. So when you're looking back over your life, remember what you're looking at is the content of your mind and not the actual event. So this brings us to the purpose. Why would you want to do a life review at any point or in any way? And its purpose is to come to peace with the composition of your mind. So, you know, it doesn't matter that you're not dealing with the event. The important thing is that it's part of your background, your memory, your tendency to respond to things or to care about things. The chances are that all of us have some ghosts that are hiding in dark corners of our home, our inner life. And a very common component of the fear that people have of dying is that all of these ghosts are going to emerge either before or after death. And I think that this is part of the notion of Judgment Day. This can be understood as having to face our unresolved issues toward the end of our lives. Stephen Levine says that a life review at some point when you're not dying can put this fear to rest by allowing us to take judgment day at our own pace when we're up to it. So the first thing that I propose as part of a life review is to celebrate. Get out the cookies and the beverages and your party hats. And I love those things that, you know, they curl, uncurl and they make noises. Get out those and celebrate your goodness. The obvious, your good deeds. All of those things, from little things to major life projects that you've engaged in up to now that have been good-hearted and generous and helpful. And celebrate your kindness. The fact that you care. You care about other people. And I hope you care about yourself. And that's a really important part of kindness. Celebrate your generosity. Your bigness of heart. Your willingness to give a little of what you've got in energy and time and resources for the well-being of others. And celebrate all the love and support that you've given to others. How precious your love is. And just look back over all the people that you've given that love to. And celebrate your wise intention. To put it in good Buddhist terms, the intention to end suffering, to let happiness reign in your life and in the lives of others. Savor your triumphs and your joys and your times of tranquility. In other words, all of the good times that you've enjoyed. And be grateful for the whole of your life that's brought you to this shining moment of embodied awareness. And be glad that you have a chance to recognize and let go of regrets and resentments. Because of course you do. And it's now. The next step I call completion. And that is to make sure that you have said everything you need to say to your loved ones. This is such a stock part of my repertoire when I'm around people who are toward the end of life and their loved ones. It's the advice I always give. I gave it to my siblings around the time of both of my parents' death. Say everything you need to say. But don't wait for the deathbed, because it has a way of surprising us. Doctors' prognoses are notoriously bad, and they're looking at the time the body completely shuts down, and it could be months before that that someone slips out of consciousness. They're just not able really to understand anymore. So don't wait till they're sick. Give them a gift when they're perfectly healthy and happy. Just get it said. If there's something that you've really always wanted to do, try to begin it now. At least sample it. See if it's what you thought it would be. I've talked to people who had a terminal illness who always wished that they had put on a backpack and traveled around the world. Well, come to find out, they'd really never done much traveling at all. And it could be they would have hated it. So whatever it is, give yourself a bite-sized sample of it and see if it's what you thought it would be. And if you can't get started, then maybe what it is it's really not that high a priority for you. And your regret is empty. It's really not something you wanted that much to do. Or perhaps in trying to start, you'll identify whatever fears or misgivings that have held you back. Just edge up to it and give it a little taste. So after completion, another big task in reviewing your life is forgiveness. Stephen Levine says that forgiveness comes from a heart that values freedom more than it wants to disguise pain. I love that. That beats Lily Tomlin. Could be Jack Kornfield. The record is unclear. No, I'm not kidding you. Both of them. They are both given credit for saying that forgiveness is giving up all hope for a better past, which is pretty good. But I like that idea that valuing the disguise of pain more than freedom from pain. And one other saying along these lines is, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And forgiveness, or what holds us back from forgiveness often, is clinging to this idea of this sort of duality that, well, if they weren't wrong, then maybe that means I am, or I was. And being right is not really all it's cracked up to be. Not when it stands between you and freedom from pain. Now, caveat. Forgiveness is a response of the heart. It's not an intellectual decision. And it can't be rushed. Quoting the author of the evening, Stephen Levine says, force, in this regard, just closes the heart. So what I'm recommending as this forgiveness component is to identify and make peace with the things, first of all, that you haven't liked about yourself. Because guess who's number one candidate for your forgiveness? If the things that you haven't liked about yourself haven't changed by now, then take a look at the possibility of changing your aversion to them. Maybe they're not so bad. Or maybe you can live with them because by now you've done a pretty good job of it. And do the same with the things that you don't like about the others in your life. Same principles apply. If they haven't changed by now, probably they're not going to. And you've lived with it this long, so apparently you can live with it. Can you just let go of this idea that they need to change, or you need to change, or that the way things are is something that you really need to push against? Every time I talk about acceptance or forgiveness, I need to distinguish it from approval. Approval is an altogether different creature. It uses a yardstick of your criteria, your idea of what's good or bad. And approval gets held up to that. Well, acceptance is really very, very different than approval. It's just recognizing it is the way it is. And you can live with that. You can be okay with what is. It's sort of like, you know, if there's a natural disaster and things are destroyed, they're bad, and the storm clears or the earth stops shaking. Can you accept that it has happened? Can you get on with the business of cleaning up and rebuilding? And pretty much 100% of the time, the answer is yes. That's what acceptance. So the next step, the next aspect of reviewing your life, I call it atonement. Sometimes it's called making amends. And like all of these steps, it's optional. There's no should or ought involved. It's just something that if you're moved to do it, if you want to do it, go for it. Just like everything else about this life review process. Amends feed the heart and quiet the mind. That's why it's in here. I remember for most of, the first 3 decades of my life, the idea of apologizing was really repulsive to me. I had an incident when I was a little kid where I talked one of my neighbor little kids to going out on a roof with me, which was 3 stories high and a very steep slant slate roof. Couldn't have been much more dangerous while the babysitter was there. So my parents made me not only go apologize to the kid's parents, the homeowner, but also to the babysitter. I had to do it twice. Thought I was going to die. Well, then I, for various reasons, developed a spiritual life, and I discovered that there was tremendous freedom that came along with making amends. And I'm using that term to cover pretty much everything from paying back the money, taking the blame, a simple apology, or asking them, what can I do to make you feel okay with this? And there's a good line of caution that comes with this amends, which is an integral part of the 12 steps, and that is to make amends, except when to do so would injure them or others. So in other words, I don't have the right to go apologize to somebody I used to be in a monogamous relationship with about an affair they never knew about. Now, wait a minute, I didn't just confess that I had done that. That was hypothetical. Nor would this hypothetical person have the right to go apologize to the unknowing spouse. So in other words, putting my own mind at ease, making my heart feel comfortable with my past deeds, doesn't justify screwing up somebody else's life or putting the hurt on them more than I've already done. But the basic rule with atonement or amends or whatever is do what will put your heart at ease and clear your conscience. And if it's not doable, either because of the rule against hurting someone else, or maybe they're not alive anymore, then send metta to them and to yourself. Mostly to them, but don't forget yourself. Finally, the point of a life review is healing. I need to point out that a life review might make you feel worse at first, because it's allowing suppressed and abandoned parts of yourself to surface and finally be tended. You've had them in this dark corner of your house, and now you've issued amnesty. They can come up. Well, maybe there's still some pain, some fear. Be especially gentle if traumatic memories arise. And if that does happen, you know, be sure that you've arranged that you can talk to a therapist or a wise friend. I've done mindfulness work in prisons and have to be very, very careful with any exploration, really, with people who don't have resources, who don't have support. So if you know that there is trauma, or if it comes up, take care of yourself. Line up the support. And as you go along, bring comfort to the fears and the sadness that arise. And here I'm going to reference the talk I gave last week about the heart's power and joy. And if you weren't here last week, it's on the website, where I talked a lot about keeping the heart open. And basically, it is using the four divine abodes, developing them through the metta phrases, the loving kindness phrases that you repeat in your mind, and also practicing opening your heart with compassion and inviting yourself to share the joy of others, to be happy about their happiness, and to seek the serene acceptance that is equanimity, really deep acceptance that brings peace. So calling up the four divine abodes, or the Brahma-viharas, you might imagine holding yourself as a little child and bringing comfort to your own fears and sadness from the past. And as you go along, bear in mind that your memories are just thoughts, and they're probably just as distorted and amorphous as the idea of the self that's had these feelings provoked by the memories, by the events that you're remembering. No matter how numerous your memories are, in the moment of embracing them, you are, your real you, what you really are, is immeasurably more vast than all of your memories combined. Our memories of the past are like dreams within which we can awaken to realize that they are illusions. We can befriend them then and let them haunt us no more. Thank you.